You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, May 2nd, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. What a week it's been. Today on the program, of course, Mr. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Also on the program today, it's that time again. Matthew Film Guy returns from an edit bay somewhere in Brooklyn, I believe, to give me movie suggestions for the coming weekend. I hope to be outside, but my back may have me literally lying down the whole weekend. We shall see. Also on the program today, House GOP to form special select committee on Benghazi. On a day where the tally of the Obamacare numbers forces them to set up a special select committee on Benghazi. Also, new employment numbers out. Some good news, some not so good news. Rush Limbaugh's ratings take a nosedive in that tiny little town of Los Angeles and that little burg known as New York. Also on the program today, if you wanted to know how the TPP would impact the sovereignty of a country in a negative way, You merely need to look to Ottawa to see if the Canadian government will sue the United States if they don't allow the Keystone XL pipeline to run through the country. And in South Dakota, a South Dakota legislator concerned at the possibility that there may be marriage equality pens a letter to the editor talking about how garbage trucks only dump one way. As we get into the part of the program that does not air on radio, we can be more explicit. All that and more on the program. Ladies and gentlemen, as many of you by now are aware, yesterday we had a little debate between myself and a professor of an endowed chair of economics at the business school of Loyola. The professor's name was Walter Block. I was apparently quite rude in interrupting him several times, and he responded in kind. Here's an example.
Hey, shut up!
But we did have more substantive exchanges than that. Now, just for the record, the professor was concerned, while he stated on the program that he felt that he had only gotten 10% of the time to explicate his positions, which mainly dealt with the minimum wage and how discriminating against a black person who seeks to sit at a lunch counter was no different than a gay person discriminating against a straight person by not having sex with them. I think that's a fair assessment of what he said. But just to make it clear, obviously, if I am functioning as the host, I'm going to get a little more time.
And let's also be fair, 10% is better than nothing.
And 10% is better than nothing, in the words of Professor Block. Or I should say more specifically, I think we all know that 6 is greater than 0. You got to listen to the whole thing to really understand what I'm talking about if you're one of those few people, apparently, who weren't listening. Now, I will also say, take this with a caveat. The professor did make the case that empirical data is often useless, I guess, in attempting to argue whether or not a policy is sound. But with that said, apparently there is some empirical data on the question as to how much time the professor had in our exchange versus me. And Matt, would you please present the findings? Now, I have not, this is not peer reviewed.
This is courtesy of listener Death Leopards.
And I would encourage our listeners to come up with their own data to so that this can be peer reviewed data. But Matt, would you please, or Data?
Okay, please. Here are the debate talk time statistics. Walter Block, Professor Walter Block,
yes,
comes in at 31 minutes and 44 seconds. Sam Cedar, the host of the Majority Report, comes in at 20 minutes and 58 seconds.
Mm.
Also an interesting little statistic. There were a total of 19 hays and one shut up.
One shut up. And speaking of hey, shut up.
Hey, shut up.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Hey, we're back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, it is Friday, May 2nd, which means it's Friday. And Friday is, of course, greater than Thursday. And why is that? Because we have Cliff Schechter. And but what is greater than Cliff Schechter? Cliff Schechter introduced by the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services. You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, LibertasLLC.com.
Cliff Schachter, can you hear the sound of my voice?
I sure can. It's the dulcet tones of Mr. Cedar.
Well, then my libertarian detector phone line is in full effect. You are clearly not a libertarian, which is why you can hear the sound of my voice on our phone.
Well, the other way you could have said that is I reached puberty.
Well, there is an argument. I mean, we had evidence yesterday that not all libertarians are people who have yet to reach puberty, although I guess we didn't do our complete due diligence on that fact. But
because there's an emotional side to puberty, too, Sam. You may remember. It's not just about the hair that grows in strange places. It's the flowing hormones.
Yes.
It's all the things that happen and to a young boy's life that make him realize that a land of ponies and tax cuts just doesn't really exist.
Yes. It couldn't have said it better myself. Now, let's talk about one element of sort of, I don't know, is it libertarianism? Perhaps, maybe on some level, I don't know. It is certainly, in American politics, it certainly has a strain. The gun nut is very often espousing Ron Paul, Rand Paul-esque libertarianism. This has been quite a couple of weeks, and I know that you were down at the NRA, weren't you? Was it this past week or the week before, I guess?
This past Sunday, actually.
Oh,
I got
God.
The pleasure of taking a road trip. From where I am, Indianapolis is only about an hour and a half, so I drove on over to see my friends at the NRA convention.
They must be so happy to see you, Cliff.
They really must. I was wondering how it would go down. My wife was a little scared for my safety, understandably. I thought, you know, inside the hall there's actual police, and they don't actually allow concealed carry of loaded weapons, because even the guys who run the NRA know that the guys who are in the NRA are full of shit about that making things safer. But, you know, it's true. And the thing is that I wasn't worried that I'm famous and anybody's going to know my name. But I have written a lot of negative things and said a lot of negative things about them. And I was there covering it for the Daily Beast. And so I had a Daily Beast press pass on. And they very easily could, you know, so I figured somebody could Google my name and Daily Beast and well, probably things that aren't so good about the NRA would come up. So that could have happened. But nobody assaulted me, thankfully, although they did assault my sense of American values and my olfactory system.
Well, there you go. And let's talk about this. We've talked, obviously, about what has happened in Georgia since their law has passed. The stories of a guy walking around a park where kids were attempting to play a baseball game, and they were essentially terrorized by this guy.
Who just said, I have a gun, and it's legal, and he's so dumb that the law doesn't even go into effect till July 1st. But, see, that's kind of the point here, is it emboldens people like that moron.
Yes. Yes, I think that's actually even more so, that's even more problematic. You're going to get a lot of these people who are just going to go out to do it because they can now.
Well, the same people that sort of come and you know, attack you or me or other folks on the internet, on the intertubes, or really places like Twitter, you know, for expressing progressive values, and you have them, I'm sure, pop up in your timeline. I have them in mine, who just come and try to insult you and usually end up making me laugh, especially when I wrote this piece. It happened. But they do that because, you know, out of some sort of emptiness in their own souls. And now you're talking about these guys with guns who can show up to churches and little league games, preschools, and do the same damn thing, you know, and basically taunt people and say, I have a gun and you can't stop me like this guy. And the even more, you know, as ridiculous, not more ridiculous, because nothing's more ridiculous than that, as ridiculous is that the shooting that happened in Kennesaw, Georgia, the same week, you know, I'm sure culture, again, not emboldening anybody, which injured, as far as I know, I don't think anyone's died from it yet, but injured six people, a mass shooting. And Kennesaw, Georgia, for people who don't know, is one of those towns in the United States, of which there are a couple, that requires everybody to own a gun. So the whole more guns make you safer, if, you know, the country of Yemen and Afghanistan were not enough to prove that in Somalia, that's a load of crap, and the much higher gun violence rate in the South versus the North of the United States, for example. But if all that wasn't enough to convince you, the fact that everybody has a gun in Kennesaw was not enough to stop this guy from strapping bullets across his chest, as it said, like Rambo, essentially, and showing up with an assault weapon and shooting people.
And to be fair, the gun ownership rate there is only about 50% relative to what is mandated. They don't enforce the law, but that's at least 15-20% higher than the average gun ownership rate. And the bottom line is,
well, it's also not one big gun-free zone, which is what these people act like.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, it's the opposite, right? I mean, if the theory of a gun-free zone was to hold, you would never, ever go and commit a mass shooting in a place like Kennesaw. So,
right. It's just another piece of evidence, as if you need it anymore, that these guys are nuts. And which is, you know, maybe I'll use that as a segue, if that's okay, because I know we've got a lot of topics. And, you know, my piece on the NRA, which is, we're so far received the scorn of some of my favorite people, Dana Loesch and Katie Pavlik, and who else? Oh, Cam Edwards, who hosts the NRA radio show, who I think, you know, what's fun about the right is they kind of think that the same insults that work on each other because of their low self-esteem kind of works on the rest of us. So they tried to all question my manhood,
right,
you know, saying things like, you got your panties in a bunch and you're a little girl. And I'm not sure, I mean, if they thought that would work and upset me or not, that, you know, we're not all cowering under the bed, scared that we've lost our manhood, that maybe we need a rather large gun to make up for a rather small part of on our body somewhere else. But it was fun. So, yeah, they came after me. And basically they did because I pointed out what I think most rational people who read this piece, people who follow this issue understand how crazy it is. But I still think most Americans who generally, in every poll will tell you, the vast majority for background checks, reporting lost and stolen guns, majorities for registration, for assault weapons being banned, for high-capacity magazines being banned, don't get, you know, because they don't follow this stuff closely, is I walked into the Indianapolis Convention Center, and they bragged on their big sign outside, which is in the piece, you know, 9 acres of guns and gear or whatever it was. And they weren't lying. I mean, it was, as far as the eye could see, row after row, you know, column after column, you know, presenter after presenter, exhibitor after exhibitor, of all of the most deadly weaponry that you can legally acquire in this country. And, you know, it's clear when Wayne LaPierre gives his ridiculous speeches, you know, the haters and the terrorists
rippers.
And the knockout gamers. I personally like the knockout gamers reference, because that's usually what I'm scared of when I go out in the street, to kind of create this fear among those in the right wing bubble that we live in this sort of Blade Runner times or Escape from New York, as opposed to what's really going on, which is, even though the death by firearm rate has been going up here for obvious reasons, overall crime has been going down in the Western world pretty precipitously. The guy that's going to knock down your door to come steal your Barca lounger doesn't really exist, except for maybe 500 times a year in this country. You know, it's statistically amazing. You know, we've been doing a number of things for that to happen. But, in the end, that's not what they create here. They create a militarized, that you'd better be ready, because the black president and the Jewish mayor from New York, and they make that clear because it's Feinstein and Bloomberg and Obama that are on everything negative. You know, as I said in the piece, it's two coastal Jews and a black guy from Chicago, or what they call the trifecta, which, you know, their guy hit me on Twitter, was, you know, their Cam Edwards, their radio host, hit me for being full of it and saying essentially, you know, well, they're the three most high profile. It's like, really? How about Gabby Giffords? How about Carolyn McCarthy? Funny. You know, you guys don't hold them up and demonize them in the same way. I don't know. Could it be the Irish last names? In any case, you know, they create this world of paranoia where the black president, the Jewish mayor, you know, the government in general, the UN, thugs, criminal gangs of Latinos, which they come right out and say, African Americans and others are coming, you know, tomorrow to knockout game your door down and steal all your stuff and shoot you and rape your wife, essentially, is what they make sure to say. And you can tell that because when you walk through this convention hall, it's not even just the assault weapons that are everywhere, the 50 caliber rifles that can take down aircraft and the rest, but it's the nighttime night vision goggles. It's the laser sighting, You know, it's the police vests, the bulletproof vests. I mean, they're selling weaponry of war that just used to not be legal and available here and isn't in any other Western country.
Well, I mean, you know, let's give them credit where credit's due. The gun activists have in fact, really stood up and said no to the selling of more guns. Apparently, a Maryland gun dealer who was about to sell a new gun, he is backing down because of threats. This is a guy who was going to sell a smart gun. And he literally got so many death threats from gun owners that he's decided not to sell it.
And this happened in California, too. There was a New York Times story about this last week or earlier this week. And the woman who's doing that has been threatened, too. And she's not backing down, to her credit. I mean, she's obviously got a lot of courage in the face of these nuts. But therein lies, again, the most obvious truth about who the NRA is. That it's not about hunting. It's not about safe. It's not about sportsmanship and education and you know, safe use of guns. Because really, I mean, for our freedoms, we want a bunch more teenagers and young kids shooting each other accidentally, don't we? We want a bunch more kids committing suicide. We want a bunch more people breaking into your house and stealing your gun and being able to use it. Or could it be that just like the way they oppose any laws, background checks, just like they oppose, you know, making people report lost and stolen guns and other common sense things, they oppose smart gun sales because those stolen guns end up back on the black market and make a hefty profit on the secondary market, of which gets kicked back up to a lot of the guys that originally sell the guns, the gun companies. That, you know, by making it tougher for criminals to get guns, you're taking away a large share of your market. And by having smart guns and saying that only one person can use them, so that person can't, let's say, give away a gun to their best friend and then buy a new one, or, you know, that person can't lose that gun and have it stolen and have somebody else use it and then resell it in the secondary market. Essentially, what you're doing by having smart guns is you're saving lives, but you're dampening down a large chunk of the gun market, and that costs people money.
Now,
and that's
explain
who
to me
in
how
for.
This works. What I don't understand is, again, this soft target theory, this is a guy who owns a gun store. How is it possible that he could be intimidated not to sell this gun? He has a gun store. He, I would imagine, is someone who knows how to use a gun. And so how is it possible that he's getting gun threats?
It's more if people don't shop there, Sam. It's more economic pressure than I think it's physical. I think if basically in the end, every gun, you know, the NRA sends out their garbage to all their people and say, boycott this guy's store. He's scared he could lose a lot of sales.
I don't know. Raymond released a long video on Facebook page saying he had received death threats and would not sell the gun. I mean, the theory, this whole soft target theory is just a bunch of bunk.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying, you know, that's one potential. What do you think is the reason why he backed up?
I think he thought he was going to get shot by one of the freaks who's probably bought guns at his store.
I think that's a big part of it, too, yes. And having gone to and seeing some of the guys who were buying guns at the convention that I was at, there's just no doubt. I mean, even the stickers they're wearing on them, and you know, they'll take the gun out of my cold dead hands. And I mean, these are guys who've played enough video games that think that's like real life, and they're looking for a confrontation.
Right.
And we know it because it happens every day in America. It doesn't just happen with, as they try to imply, the gangs in the inner city. No, it happens with rural white guys every day, all the time, who think they're tough and somebody pisses them off, and in a moment when their manhood is questioned or whatever, shoot somebody before they calm down and realize, oh my God, I just killed somebody, because there's a gun available. And in other places, that gun wouldn't be available. So it could be a lunatic who, because the NRA has made sure to block also people's names being shared in the system, our NICS system that does background checks. So there's all sorts of people out there who are insane and, you know, and have been declared mentally unfit and can still get guns. Could be somebody who could shoot this guy, but it also could be just momentary insanity. It could be somebody who loses their temper and does something stupid. The point is that they've made sure that so many people can have guns anywhere that even a state like Maryland, who has some of the best gun laws in the country, well, you know, Virginia's not far away.
Right.
It's just like when people point out Chicago and you have to tell them, a large chunk of those guns come from Indiana, as a large chunk of the guns in Washington, D.C. come from neighboring West Virginia and Virginia, as in New York, a large chunk of the guns are making their way in from Pennsylvania that has less stringent laws, or sadly, Ohio in the northern part of the state. It's not tough to get guns in. And so that's the problem here, is that you could say, well, Montana, you can have your own laws if you want. But to take a phrase and sort of change it a little bit, what happens in Montana doesn't stay in Montana.
Right.
Or in Mississippi. So when they act like, well, and just to end this segment, you know, I know you want to move on to other stuff, but to end where we started, when you said, is this a form of libertarianism? It is Rand Paul's libertarianism, which is really, you know, being a neo-Confederate. It's not libertarianism. It's radical states' rights nihilism is what it is. That I have the right to whatever I want, and our state does, and you don't get to come tell us what we have to do to protect other states, which, you know, you might have a point if it weren't for the fact that what you do in your state always crosses state lines.
And that is a good segue point. That, of course, is what the Supreme Court ruled in terms of the EPA's authority to stop interstate pollution, downwind pollution from coal-fired power plants. But let's talk about the Supreme Court. And this is, I guess, sort of a messy segue. But, I mean, let's talk about the Supreme Court.
It was a forced segue and yet still a good one.
And let's talk about it in relation to what's going to happen in the fall. I think, frankly, you know, there's still an ongoing conversation about whether or not, you know, someone like Ginsburg or even Breyer as Supreme Court justices should retire at this point if they want to ensure that President Obama has the latitude to appoint a successor for their seats. I mean, Ginsburg I believe she's in her 80s now. She's been dealing with health issues for a long time. Breyer's also been dealing with health issues, my understanding, as well. So it raises an interesting question, and particularly who knows what the real odds are, but a 50-50 chance seems a pretty sound guess that the Democrats will lose the Senate. It will be controlled by the Republicans. The Democrats will still have a pretty strong filler ability to filibuster. That's assuming that McConnell doesn't rid the Senate of its ability to filibuster.
Which he will at the moment. He needs to.
I'm not convinced. I mean, I think they see a lot more value of it. And I think they also know that any time in the Senate would be control in the Senate would be short lived because 26.
It also depends on, you know, I mean, McConnell more than anybody else, the corporate guys pull his strings.
Right.
So it actually will depend on what the bill is, who's going to benefit, and how much money they stand to benefit from that bill. If it's Sheldon Adelson or it's the Koch brothers or some people like that, I don't know. I could see that filibuster going pretty quickly if they make a call to Mr. McConnell and say, you'd better get rid of it.
But the thing you also have to keep in mind is that President Obama will have a veto pen. Now, who knows how much he will use it? I would not want to bet my daughter's 529 on President Obama aggressively vetoing. I think there's going to be he will very quickly turn into somebody who's going to deal with the Republicans, in my estimation and frankly concern. But what's interesting?
I mean, he'll have to on some of the craziest stuff, and the question is, what will he negotiate on? And we already, I think, have gotten a window into some of that.
Yes. And it's very concerning. It is conceivable that we're going to see a situation if we have a Supreme Court justice, particularly, it could be from the five or the four, frankly. If one of them has to step down because of health reasons, it's conceivable that we will see 2 years of basically.
They just won't put somebody else on the Supreme Court like they were trying to do with the D.C. court.
I mean, think that's very possible.
When people underestimate these guys and don't realize that, you know, we're not in an unprecedented situation. There was right before the Civil War. You know, there have been other periods in American history, too. But we're dealing with, you know, an opposition that calls themselves conservative, ironically enough, and it completely isn't, if you look at the what that word would tell you in the dictionary. They have no respect for tradition and institutions, and you know, and what custom has been. And so in the ways that they've done other things, like filibustering an unprecedented amount, blocking people that Obama would have serve him and his government and regulatory agencies and stuff like that, there's no reason that we should suspect that they won't just flat out block a Supreme Court justice in the hope that they can win in 2016 and just have there only be eight justices there. I see no reason to believe that they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, the only thing that I think cuts against, you know, sort of how effective the Republicans in the Senate would be and how bold they would be, and I have to give credit where credit's due. I was on Hayes last night, and David Frum made this point, amongst other points which I thought were ludicrous, frankly, but... that you do have.
David Frum's kind of like that. He makes one or two really good points about stuff, things I agree with and I think are very smart. And then somehow there's a neocon devil on one shoulder, you know, just tugging him back.
Yes.
And he has to come out with crazy again.
But he had a good sort of analysis of what could happen in a Republican dominated Senate, and that has to do with the fact that you have. At least three potential candidates, presidential hopefuls in there, you know, between Cruz and Rand Paul and I can't remember who the third now was, but I mean
Rubio
and Rubio. They're going to be pushing
maybe even more
and maybe more. They're going to be pushing their own agendas and trying to sort of create some daylight between each other. And so that's really going to have, I think, a big impact on the efficacy.
That's true. You might be able to join with one of them, as crazy as that sounds, because one of them might do something, you know, because let's remember that conservatism has a number of different strains. All I have to do is look at someone like Rand Paul, and, you know, that even mixing with his neo-confederacy are a few good things that come along with it. And, you know, on foreign policy and you know, wiretapping, other things. And then maybe he might do something to push daylight between himself and Republicans, bring a few Republicans along. And you get something, you know, you get something passed.
Well, I don't know that you'd see anything good.
You need to bring more people along in the House. The House
right.
would still be a problem.
You wouldn't see anything good, but I think what it would do is they would each have their own version of craziness for one bill and a line in the sand. So it would might make it harder for the Republicans in the Senate to pass anything because they would have competing versions of the same agenda, just trying to out-crazy each other. So I mean it's
and that's happened in the past. Like we've had, I mean, yeah. A classic example is the original League of Nations with Woodrow Wilson, which it wasn't two groups trying to out crazy each other, but you had an isolationist right wing group and a moderate group, neither of whom would accept the other side, and Wilson would only have his own stuff, so no one could come to an agreement, and we didn't join. So you have had before where Republicans have controlled the legislature, but different factions of their party have found ways to screw themselves and not get the best deal possible. So, yes, that's just one instance that comes to mind. It's certainly not unprecedented.
And I will say, too, and I mentioned this in the lead up, that it's quite clear, at least what the Republican strategy going to go into the fall is. And it seems to be that they are literally putting. And, you know, it's early, of course, and in September they'll probably roll something else out, or October. But they seem to be going all in on Benghazi. Like, that is going to be the premier talking point. They're
right.
Losing their Obamacare steam, at least to a certain extent. Now, but remember, they only have to speak to a very narrow segment of the population. One which, unfortunately, there's been a lot of stories about this past week or 2 weeks, tends to vote far more than the rest of the American public.
Well, that's what they're going to try to do. And that's, you know, that ties into that sort of NRA convention, too, and what goes on there. They're going to try to gin up the craziest, most motivated sector of their base, you know, who often, you know, that's who causes trouble for us in midterms, because we have not found a way yet to equally convince the most devoted part of our base, which doesn't happen to be crazy, and maybe in that one way, only that one way, it's a problem, because they're not driven to the polls by, you know, fear of a black UN helicopter coming in and snatching them up. They have to be driven to the polls by either hope or a positive message or fear of what you know, right-wingers are going to do to our government. And sadly, during midterms, they're often disengaged from that. And it's not all their fault, because a lot of people who we're talking about now are people of color and working people who have bills to worry about and life to worry about, you know, and whose lives have gotten demonstrably worse because of income inequality and things that Republicans and sadly some Democrats have pushed. And so, you know, when you're worrying about your health and you're worried about how you're going to pay for your kid's school and you're worrying about a number of other things, you're not necessarily paying so close attention to the midterm elections.
I definitely think there is an overemphasis by the liberals, and let's call them, you know, liberal-leaning people who are living their lives and just want the government to work, that they get disengaged, that they invest so much in the presidency, but just disengage during the off-year elections. I mean, it just seems somewhat structural on some level.
Well, we also have a propensity to think the best of people. And it's burned us again and again. When I say people, I mean people on the right, and that if we just make a logical argument backed by, you know, statistics, by science and history and math, that we'll win them over, and not realize that you can say, you know, the most sane things in the world and make the best arguments in the world, and there are certain people you are just never going to win over. And that becomes a problem too. So are people disengaged? They're like, oh yeah, it'll be taken care of. You know, we're on the right side. So, and it becomes, you're right. I will say, for the first time in a while, you know, and a lot of different groups deserve credit for this. DFA, Credo, others. Credo did this last cycle too. It seems like a lot of groups on the left have learned how important, you know, these off year elections are in terms of base turnout, and are spending their money not on glossy TV ads and stuff that pads pockets, but are actually really spending it on identifying and turning out voters on the left. And if we have enough people doing that, maybe we can, you know, maybe things will change. Maybe we can get our voters out, you know, even if not in the same numbers as we would during a presidential election, somewhat more than we have in past midterms. That's at least what I'm hoping.
Now, one thought that I think, you know, the Democrats are hoping will drive people to the polls is this, is the minimum wage. It gets a lot of, it polls very well, but I don't know that it's enough to bring people out. Now, the Senate this week, attempted to pass an increase in the minimum wage to 10-10. We knew it would go nowhere in the House, but they could not overcome a filibuster in the Senate. And so now this fight for the minimum wage seems really to be moving locally. In Seattle, we're seeing something that, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, it's positive. The mayor yesterday, presented a plan to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, but it is very much incremental. And
it's gradual. It could take up to 7 years.
Yeah.
Hell, that's still better. I mean, look, is that what I want? No, it's better than what's in other places. And I feel like, again, the value, and this is another thing the right gets and why they go after state legislatures and they do stuff, is you know, politics is just, I mean, again, is not just based on facts and figures. It's based on emotion, and it's based on conventional wisdom that builds from that emotion and culture. And when somebody's willing to step forward, just when a couple people are willing to step forward on not just not cutting Social Security, but raising it, and just like when a couple people are willing to step forward and talk about income inequality, you know, suddenly others are more willing to do it. And so the fact that Seattle has been willing to do that and is getting the kind of press they're getting, then maybe we'll see some other cities. And maybe there'll be other cities that are even, you know, have more progressive city councils or mayors who might do it in a shorter period of time. And then there'll be more pressure on cities like Seattle to speed it up. So just the fact that it's out there is important.
Yes, I would agree with that. And we should just note that Kashama Sawant, the socialist city council member, she is continuing her drive to get signatures to get a referendum on this, because to raise the minimum wage that slowly, in some respects, does seem to be a rather watered down proposal. But getting back to your point about it may be catching fire in other cities. In LA, the city council is considering a plan to increase the minimum wage for about 12,000 members of the hospitality industry to 15, 30 an hour or somewhat. I mean, and so that's encouraging. In Chicago, voters in a non-binding referendum are looking to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour for employees of large corporations with something like $50 million worth of annual revenue. I think there's something happening in South Dakota in terms of a ballot measure. In New York, there is a push to allow for local home rule, to allow, like New York, say, to raise its minimum wage. And of course, Andrew Cuomo the Lesser, has been fighting this proposal.
I love that.
For reasons that seem to, well, for stated reasons that seem to me to be incomprehensible. The idea that somehow you will disadvantage cities that raise the minimum wage. You don't want to create disincentives for business to go there. But if the city is making the choice themselves, I don't understand how that's a valid complaint. And
yeah,
it's classic Cuomo. In Michigan, I think there is also a push to have restaurant workers make a larger minimum wage. So we're seeing this across the country on a more localized level. But again, you're right. I think it creates a sort of a sense of momentum.
I mean, and I think that that's what's important. And, you know, I've worked on enough political issues at this point. I've seen it with what's going on with guns, where a number of states have passed sane laws and a number of localities. You know, was it Travis County? Is the one where Austin is in Texas? They were saying they were going to require, I don't even know how, if it's what the end result of that is, but they were going to require background checks. So you've got a place in Texas doing it. You know, gay marriage, we've seen the same thing happen. Pot, I mean, you know, there's a point where this stuff becomes, you know, for lack of a better word, viral.
Yeah.
And enough people start pushing an idea, you know, and particularly people who are either celebrities or are very engaged online, and we get there. So all of these things are in the right direction. And, you know, we'd like it to be faster and we'd like it to be national, but it never works that quickly, sadly. So
well,
we take
what we can get. And time
yep,
will
and we
tell.
Keep, take what we can get and we're not satisfied. We keep fighting.
Cliff Schechter, on that note, I will bid you adieu until next Friday.
Oh, you speak of the French, huh?
Yeah, of course. But now everybody's speaking French because of Piketty, right? Piketty.
Oh, that's
Piketty.
That's right. Piketty. I mean, we can't understand. Well, actually, he translated into English, so we don't really need to speak French. But, you know, it's fun to pronounce his name like that.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure.
Always my pleasure, Sam. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Yep,
all right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking to Matthew Film Guy from he's gainfully employed as an editor, I think, of a new web series. We will talk to him about that and anything else that's going on, and he will give me a movie recommendation or maybe a TV show recommendation for the weekend. We'll be right back after this. Ladies and gentlemen, It is time to talk to Matthew Film Guy right after we hear the Matthew Film Guy theme song.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, Film Guy.
Matthew, wow! I don't know if I ever noticed that sort of like Doppler effect at the end there of Matthew Film Guy.
Never noticed that?
I never noticed that. Matthew, how are you?
I'm fine, Sam. How are you? Thanks for having me, as usual.
Where are we? You sound like you're in some type of like space capsule or something.
Okay, I have it on speakerphone. Is this not sufficient for you?
No, it sounds good. It's a weird sound. Now you're in an edit bay, is that right? Are you in your apartment?
I'm in my own office, my own edit bay.
Is that still in your in your bedroom?
No.
All right.
It's the other bedroom.
Oh, okay. So you've turned that into an office.
That's right. An editing suite, if you will.
Okay, I will. An editing suite. And that, of course, begs the question, or at least demands the question, what are you editing, Matthew?
Actually, currently, I am working on editing a comedy web series that is being produced and written and starring comedian Ted Alexandro.
Well. We have had Ted Alexandro on this program. I think we interviewed him down at Zuccotti Park, if I recall correctly.
That is correct. I recall when I hooked you guys up and brought Ted into the Majority Report fold, as I feel you guys have a lot in common. And Ted's views are always good to air on these subjects.
People seem very touchy these days about getting full credit for some of these.
Hey, Sam, let me talk.
Shut up.
Sam, is two better than one? Okay, never
mind. Hey, shut up.
You know what, Matthew?
Oh, you have that. That's awesome.
I got to say, when I hear it played back to me, you sound exactly like him.
Well, I am a Jew from Brooklyn, so, you know, hey, it's in my DNA.
Hey, shut up.
Wow. I got to say, that boiled my friggin' blood so badly that I can't believe how you went through that, Sam, but congratulations for getting through it.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I quite enjoyed myself. I mean, I didn't even when that was played back to me, I was like, wow, I didn't even on video I could see that I was basically just trying to suppress laughter. And there
yes.
was something about when something like that happens, I can imagine. I've had enough therapy to understand why I react the way I react to it, but
I appreciate that. You really do. I mean, I could see that you were channeling a kind of a Zen state there. I was really impressed.
I was actually enjoying it. I mean, I was beyond Zen. I was on I don't know. What's the next level after you've achieved a Zen state? What's the one that tickles you a little bit?
Oh, I think that's returning to the marketplace. So you've achieved enlightenment, and then now you're just back in it, and you're just ready to go one step at a time. You know, nothing phases you, really.
That's true. Nothing does phase me, Matthew. Now, when you edit a web series like that, is Ted there with you? I mean, how does that work? Or do you just do it and you show it to him?
No, well, a little bit of that, but actually at the moment, Ted is here with me. Would you like him to say hello?
Sure.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Well, I was actually looking for you to say hello, Ted.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I missed my cue. Hey, let him talk, Sam. Let him talk.
Now, how is Matthew doing, Ted? How's he doing? I mean, you can be honest.
Matthew's doing wonderfully. Matthew also edited my recent one-hour special, so we have a really nice thing going here in his spare bedroom.
That's great. I'm glad you... I'm glad
we have a good system, and he's doing.
And do you ever leave? I mean, or do you just like move in for a period of time in that that bedroom, and then just leave when the project's over?
Yeah, there is a bed. It hasn't come to that yet for me to sleep over, but you know, it's good to know the option is there.
And what? Tell us about the series. What is it?
It's called Teacher's Lounge. It's kind of based on my former years as a music teacher in the New York City public school system. I taught for 5 years. So this is basically, I play the music teacher, and my buddy Hollis James plays the janitor, and then different comedians come in playing faculty. So the first four, we have Lewis Black as the principal, Judy Gold as the gym teacher, Janine Garofalo makes the public address announcements, Judah Friedlander plays the computer science teacher, and musician Ted Leo is he plays himself. So those are the first four that we're editing now.
That actually sounds great. I mean, I don't mean to sound surprised, but I mean, that sounds great.
Thank you. Thank you. No, we're surprised that we got all those people, and we're shooting six more of them coming up. So we'll have a total of 10. We have Jim Gaffigan will play the earth science teacher. Dave Attell is going to play the school photographer. And a host of other people. So yeah, we're kind of we're excited about the whole slate of 10 episodes, which will be coming out sometime in June.
All right. Well, available.
I was waiting for that.
No, of course. I'm obligated. Now, do you still have a lot of friends who are teachers?
You know, not too many. I kind of cut ties with that world. Although a lot of people in my family are teachers, so I still have that. But yeah, not too many folks that I taught with.
This is testing week, and so I was curious if you ever get any feedback. They're now doing all the math testing this week, and that's
right, all the core stuff. Yeah, I do have a couple of friends who are still in that world, and yeah, they do get incredibly stressed, and yeah, they kind of unload about all of that stuff, which makes me glad that I'm out of it.
Yeah, I mean I can only imagine. I mean, I hear stories all the time about teachers dropping out, but I will let you. I'll let you get back to trying to figure out who represents me. So I'll just wait for the offer.
Absolutely, yeah. We just have to work out the details.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'll send word down the line to make this smooth out the bumps, as it were.
Sam, don't force us to be bisexual here, okay? We want to discriminate.
There you go, Matthew, film guy. Proving that he listens to the show. Now, do you guys listen to the show while you're editing, or is that too distracting?
Today we were, actually. Yeah, we had it
well,
on.
Well, no, of course today you were, because you knew you were coming on. But, I mean, not yesterday?
We do it, like, every other day, one on, one off. Oh. So not yesterday, no.
All right, fair enough. So that's.
I have a lot of catching up to do for the show, because I was away in California for a while, so I'm a little behind. But I listened to yesterday's just because it looked so good.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so what else are you doing, Matthew, these days? Did you see your friend Mark Maron when you were in L.A.?
What's that?
You see Maron when you were in L.A.?
I did not see Maron. He was actually out of town. He was in Ohio, where I'm from, while I was out there, so we didn't cross paths.
Yeah.
I saw him briefly when he was out here a couple weeks ago, but no, I didn't go see him out there. Actually,
did see him when he was out here. That's funny, because I texted him. I said, you're in New York, and he just wrote back, yeah.
Yeah, that's his way of saying, you know, take me out to lunch.
I'm too busy. I'm too busy to see you.
Well, I guess for some people, he was too busy.
What did he have you do? Did you do what did you do for him when he came into town?
You know, I cleaned out his car and I shined his shoes. No, I didn't do anything. We went to lunch.
Oh, really? He took you out to lunch? That's nice. Where, in the city or in Queens?
I didn't say he took me out to lunch, but I said we went to lunch.
Was that in Queens or in the city?
In the city.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
no. Maron's not going to Queens.
Well, you know, no he offense. Used to have his place. Used to be in Queens.
Yeah, no, he's never. He doesn't want to come out here again. He doesn't want to ride the subway, from what I understand.
Yeah, no, he can't.
I met him down there. We talked and you know chit chatted. You know, your name may have come up once or twice.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
He actually told me the idea for your episode that never actually happened, and it sounds hilarious. And I encouraged him to do it if there's a season three.
He never told me it.
Oh yeah,
I think it was. Was it? Did I come out because I wanted to leave politics? Was that it?
Yeah, you. Yeah. No, you came out, and from what I understand, I may be misrepresenting it, but you came out there, kind of criticizing his life and talking about how your life and you know is more real and doing more real you know work in the world and that's you care it. About the world, and then you wound up getting cast in a sitcom that he was trying to get cast in, and you actually did better at entertainment than he did, and there was resentment involved, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow, what a world.
Yeah.
I love how even in his scenarios, even as the exact opposite has taken place in the actual world, there's still a way where he has resentment.
Well, there was a time. There was a time where that was the dynamic. There was a time.
I understand, but it's just amazing that he wants to, like, preserve and kind of enlarge that
dynamic. Well, we get it's hard for us to break our patterns, isn't it, Matthew?
Yeah, and it's good to go to the well of what you know is, you know, effective and real in your life to make a film or a TV show out of. So I think that would have been a great vibe.
Yeah.
That would have been really funny.
I agree. So now, Matthew,
I was in L.A. because the film that I recommended a couple times ago, Detonator, that I edited, was showing in L.A. So I ran through that, and then Mary and I were on a vacation up and down the coast, and that was very beautiful.
I'm afraid I didn't see Detonator yet.
I think we
did have some listeners who did, though, and so you know, people certainly got something out of that recommendation. Detonator.
Great. Still, well, it's still available on demand and on iTunes.
All right. Great. I will put that down. Detonator. Yes.
Yeah. Write it down again under the other time you wrote it down.
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem is I need to have a central. Is there an app that they've developed to pick out movies that you want to watch?
I use the notepad feature. It comes on every iPhone.
Yeah, I know, but then your notes get lost. I don't know. I guess I could do that. Yeah, movies to watch. I probably even
have a list of movies to watch. It gets bigger and bigger, but you know, you got to want it, Sam. No app is going to make you want it.
All right. Well, Detonator. The problem is I every time I'm like, "Where's that list of things?" It was on a tiny scrap of paper and it was in my shirt pocket, which ended up in the laundry, and then I don't know where it is.
Yeah, hey, Sam, are you going to let me talk here?
All right, so...
I enjoy your show. I enjoy coming on your show, but I will not come on the show again.
Hey, shut up!
That is the best soundboard edition ever.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's actually going to make it to my ringtone.
Can you use that at home? Can you just call it up at will when somebody's talking to you?
I'm a little bit nervous about doing that, but yes, I suppose if I could. And
it is hostile. It is angry and hostile. So yeah, you gotta be ready.
If there's somebody out there, I should say, who also wants to sort of create a compilation of all the times that he complained that I interrupted him, I would be a game to watch that about 5,000 times.
Oh God.
So, yeah. So Matthew.
Yes.
Let's get down to brass tacks here.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
My turn.
Your turn. I'm now.
Should I go?
I'm now doing my host duties and allowing my guest to speak, which apparently I have a problem with.
Oh, finally!
But as you know, I have a problem sometimes interrupting people. So.
Well, you should also explain. In a very in-depth and friendly way, a movie recommendation that Matthew had made previously, so Matthew can say, "Hey, shut up!" But thank you for that accurate explanation.
Yes, yeah.
Of that movie pick. That was the other great dynamic.
Yeah.
That's true. Stop interrupting me.
Okay. You've characterized me fairly. Shut up.
Hey, let's say a young black man in the ghetto wants to watch a movie.
Right. Okay. All right.
What would he want to do? Just say.
All right.
Okay, no, so seriously, Sam, the movie that I had on tap for you this week is actually one that Ted and I were just talking about, and I don't know if you've ever been familiar with the films of a filmmaker named Robert Kramer, who made a lot of sort of politically tinged but narrative films in the 60s and 70s, and another one in the 80s called Route 1 USA, but the film that I want everyone to go out and watch this week
well,
is
wait
actually...
Wait a second. Now,
interrupting.
What? What movies did Robert Kramer make? How do you spell them?
Okay,
with a K or a C?
With a K.
Okay.
So he was part of a agitprop political newsreel company called Newsreel that made all kinds of different documentaries and kind of news dispatches from all over the world in the 60s and with a, you know, a leftist bent, and he wanted to start making narrative films. So some of his early films the one I want to recommend today is Ice.
Ice.
Yeah, it's called Ice. It's made in 1970, And it's basically the story of, it's like a kind of an alternative near future where a kind of fascist regime has taken over the United States, and we're following the lives of these young militants who have started these kind of enclaves or resistance groups in New York City. And it's shot on the streets of New York City, guerrilla style, handheld cameras, black and
white.
Wait.
How did you not tell me about this movie when we were going doing Bad Situationist? That's what it basically started out as.
You know what? I don't know if I knew the film by the time of Bad Situationist. We're going back, you know, 13 years here.
Originally, the working title was the New York Liberation Freedom Front.
Yeah. This one's not quite as funny, but it's a very similar. It's done extremely straight faced, and it's not just a kind of fantasy. It kind of deals with what he felt was at the time some of the fault lines in the leftist movement, kind of some of the personality conflicts, some of the sort of power plays between different groups. Like you'll see the kind of middle class student groups go up to Harlem and try to talk to the sort of African-American groups and the different power struggles, but they're all, it's very much like a resistance kind of movie. And in that world, the United States has invaded Mexico, so there's like a kind of a science fiction kind of alternate history bent to it. But I think you'd really enjoy it. And the thing is, it's on YouTube. It's not really widely available to stream, but somebody did put it up on YouTube, and it's also available at some of your other BitTorrent sites, if that's what you're into. But it's only available on a PAL DVD right now, but you can find it on
PAL DVD.
Yeah, Robert Kramer is huge in Paris and France, as you can imagine. His other movies he made was Milestones, which was about the disillusionment of commune living, kind of hippies in the mid '70s who were kind of burying the kind of utopian idea that they ran into. That's another amazing film. And in the 80s, he made one called Route 1 USA, where he kind of did a half hybrid documentary driving down Route 1 or down the East Coast.
Oh, wow.
All of his are worth checking out. He's an underrated genius of a filmmaker and not widely available, but YouTube is our savior once again.
Yeah, and the thing is, with Apple TV, what I can do is I just bring it up on my iPhone. I can watch the YouTube there and beam it to my television.
There you go. Go for it. I really want to see what you make of this movie, Ice. I don't know how many dozens of other movies I've recommended you haven't seen yet, but maybe this one can jump to the top of the list.
Well, I have seen at least one of the movies you've recommended, and one
is better than zero. Thank you.
Is one greater than zero?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I stepped on your bed. I got too excited.
You got too excited there. One is definitely better. Than zero.
Hey, shut up!
So we agree that seeing one movie I've recommended is better than seeing zero, but seeing two is even better than one.
Yes.
Hey, shut up!
Fine, I will.
All right, I should tell you, that's the Matt is got that on his button. I don't even have it on my thing here, so.
No, I know.
He's getting a little bit trigger happy, I think.
That's all right. That's right in Matt's cadence too. So it's like it's easier for him to hit the button.
Yeah, I know. It's like the Queens Brooklyn thing here is just it's getting laid on thick. So
I want to say I enjoyed a lot of the Matt and Mike days that they did while you were off. I especially enjoyed hearing Matt develop his World Wrestling Federation announcer voice when he gets really angry at some of the stories.
Really?
I don't. I have to go back and listen.
Yeah, I just hear you go into like, can you imagine, McMahon, why the minimum wage would not get raised another dollar?
What you gonna do, brother?
Yeah, exactly. It was fun. It was great. You guys did a good job.
All right. Well, Matthew Film Guy, the movie is Ice by Robert Kramer. I gotta say, it sounds like something that is right up my alley. I mean, I'm shocked that we haven't talked about this before.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we hadn't, but better late than never.
And now I will let you get back. Now, where is this this Ted's show going to be? Where if we wanted to see it I guess I would when I get to the set, I would probably find out what the URL is. But before then, I mean, where would people see it?
Yeah, I'll let Ted handle that.
It will be coming out. Huffington Post Comedy will be putting it out, but we're also working with Snag Films. But I think Huffington Post Comedy is probably the safest bet that it'll be on kind of wide release availability.
All right. Huffington Post, I've never heard of them, but I will look them up. Huffington Post Comedy. And when can we anticipate its release?
I would say it's going to be mid-June, so about a month and a half.
All right. So it's a summer release, summer blockbuster, if you will.
Big blockbuster.
And Matthew, I will let you get back to work. I hope that you're not going to charge Ted for this. So
I paused the meter. I paused the meter.
Okay. All right. Well, Matthew Film Guy, the movie is Ice by Robert Kramer. It sounds like a winner, folks. And so we're going to say goodbye to Matthew. Goodbye, Matthew.
Bye, Sam. Thanks for letting me talk at least 50%.
Yeah, you're welcome. I actually think Matthew got way more than 50% on that. But I've got to... I got to get my goddamn chess clock. That's the problem.
I forgot about the chess. That was a whole other thing.
Yeah, I didn't know where that was
just
going.
That was just an abundance in that interview.
Yes,
that's all
there
I could
was.
Say.
Yeah, I may actually go back and listen.
He
to
brought
that.
A lot to the marketplace.
He did. He certainly did.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break and head into the funner half of the program, wherein we've got we have got the full trailer for the new creationist movie, A Matter of Faith. It looks awesome, ladies and gentlemen. Were Matter of Faith out this weekend, guess what movie I would not be watching? I would not be watching Ice. I'd be watching A Matter of Faith. But it's not out yet, so we will play the trailer and then add our own, we don't know exactly what's in the script at this point, but... And then, of course, we have some other stories. We'll get to your IMs and your phone calls. Been a crazy week. Folks, you can support this program. If you like what you hear, if you want to hear me continue to debate guys like Walter Block and others of his ilk, by all means, become a member. Keep this show alive. You can head to majority.fm and become a member. If you really don't want me to debate Walter Block again,
that's too bad.
We can create a new level of membership that would be actually larger. Now, it would be, it would be a higher level of membership than the Sam Cedar. Now, we all know that the Sam Cedar membership is where, for I believe it's $1,000 a month, you can actually take over the show, move in with my family, and I come back from Mexico for 3 weeks a year to give you a vacation. We could put in a higher level of membership called the Walter Block Endowed Sam Cedar membership.
Walter Blocked.
Wherein, let's say, I don't know, for... maybe, let's say, $3,000 a month. We will not have him on the show ever again. For as long as you're a member on the Walter Block Endowed membership, we will never have him on the show.
Because, frankly, it's sickening how entertaining we found that interview to be.
It is.
It really will take an incredible financial commitment to stop that from happening again.
Yes.
Just to be blunt about
yes.
it.
Yes. Now, I don't want I don't want people to start thinking, oh, Sam is so easily swayed by a couple of dollars. It'll change his programming. But,
$3,000 is not a couple of dollars.
That's
so look, I'll tell you what. And we will take counter offers to have Walter Block on once a week.
That's
for
right.
For $5,000 a month.
That's right. And so we'll get a bidding war started here. Now, if you just want to find out what's going to happen with that, then it's just $10 a month.
And we guarantee you that even with the $5,000 and Block on once a week, his fee for appearances will never exceed $4 an appearance.
I don't even know if it's that. I mean, we'll
see. If he even notices.
Because, the $5,000 would probably just guarantee that we invite him, not that he shows up.
Oh, he'll,
but he will continue to get.
He will never not say yes to an appearance. I would very very safe bet there.
Well, that's as long as I am polite. All right, folks, you can also support this program by going to MajorityReportKickback.com. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link at MajorityReportKickback.com. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Just type into your browser, JustCoffee.coop. Coop or co-op. Pick up our app at MajorityApp.com. Nearly 5,000 of you have already done so. 5,000 people on the app. MajorityApp.com. Give us an iTunes review. Donate your account. DonateYourAccount.com/MajorityFM. Tell your friends. Post our stuff on Facebook. Post it on Reddit. We'll put a link to the Reddit before and after, right?
Yeah.
On the homepage of Majority FM, anticipating the debate with Walter Block. All right, we'll be back in just a moment.